Welcome to Under the Shell, presented by Terrapin Sports Central. This week, we sit down with head coach of the women's soccer team, Megan Ryan Nemzer.
I'm Brendan Weissel.
Sam Jane.
Michael Big Mike Howes.
And this is Under the Shell.
Well, we're pleased to welcome on Coach Nemzer to the program, head coach of the women's soccer team. New face, but ultimately, we're excited to get to know Coach a little more. And thanks again, we just said, for hopping on, but appreciate you taking the time to speak with us, Coach.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. I'm excited to be under the shell with this and happy to get going and tell you all about Maryland women's soccer and all the great things we have going on.
Yeah. Well, I want to start with the obvious question, because, you know, you kind of made the decision to leave another Big Ten program to come here. What was that? What went into that decision? Why was Maryland ultimately able to draw you away from your previous stop?
Well, yeah, I think there's a lot of things. I think, first of all, what Maryland has is undeniable as far as the resources, the location, especially with women's soccer, the rich history. You know, we have won championships here. The men's side has won 4 national championships, and they have the exact same resources that the women's team has. So you can't say that it can't be done. And I think that was the biggest thing that got me excited about just coming here and doing this the right way, doing it where you can continue to build a championship vision. I met with Damon, and he was unbelievable. He was amazing. You know, he sold me after 5 minutes of talking to him, just the vision that he had for Maryland women's soccer. Came here and the support staff, the people is what sold me. I always say it's the people that make your memories and not so much a tree or a building. And the people came here I came here and I met the people, and they absolutely are all in on Maryland women's soccer. And I grew up here. You know, I was a 9-year-old ball girl when they were competing for championships. And I still remember them dog piling after winning a big game. And that's where I fell in love with the game when I was 9 years old. And I saw these, you know, amazing young women on the field and being dominant and, you know, pushing themselves, pushing their limits. And that was something that I really wanted to be part of. And ultimately came full circle when they asked me to be the head coach here.
You know, being at Rutgers for over 10 years, being an associate head coach for the last 8 while bringing out one of the best defenses in the country, kind of what did you learn from your experiences there?
I learned a lot. Obviously, that was my home for several years. And, you know, they joked that I was becoming a Jersey girl. So, but I think the biggest thing that I learned is that, you know, the expectations can't change. The expectations, whether it's on the field, off the field, need to be very high. And if you continue to support your student athletes and demand more, typically they want to meet them. And that's where I feel like I fell in love with the developing of the student athletes and ultimately having amazing relationships. I think if I could take one thing away that I still use every single day is building relationships with my players. If they understand that I care about them and they understand that, you know, there's a reason why I expect 10 out of 10 on the field is because I care about them and I want them to meet their goals and their expectations. I think it goes a lot further. But the relationship for me is really, really important.
You talked a little bit about, you know, Damon Evans kind of getting you to come here. On the flip side, I guess, what is your pitch to get players to come here? Obviously, a strong recruiting class going into next season and future years. So what's your pitch?
Become Maryland legends. Come here. Make a name for yourself instead of going to a program that might be already there or just being a part of it. Be the forefront, you know, and bet on yourself. I think that's the biggest thing that I ask recruits is like, do you bet on yourself? If you bet on yourself, we have all the resources here. We have the program changers that are here. We have the resources. We have the coaching staff that is all in. Are you all in on Maryland? And if that answer is yes, then we have a spot for you. But, you know, if you're going to do this, you have 4 years to do it. You know, make a name for yourself, come in here and change the program and be a dominant name in this program and leave a legacy.
I remember when you guys won, I think it was the first Big Ten game, like in 2 seasons, it was like 0-16, something not very good, but you won the first conference game. And I remember players saying like, we celebrated like it was the World Cup. You know, has it been hard for you as a coach because you've come from a program with success and, you know, being around women's soccer for so long, to kind of have players realize, okay, you know, that's great, we got the win, but ultimately we're not even close to where we want to get to. How do you balance that idea of, you know, making sure that they understand that it's not nearly acceptable to have one win, you know what I mean? Versus, you know, okay, well, they did get their first win in a while.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing that we've been talking about is trust the process, you know, and it's not so much about the destination right now. It's about the day to day and becoming 1% better. And I was extremely excited that they got excited, you know, about that win. But at the end of the day, we need to continue to have a championship mindset. And that's what we've been talking about this spring, is what does a championship mindset look like? We spent a lot of time off the field describing what it looks like, describing what it doesn't look like. And I give all the credit to the program, the captains, the leaders in this class, because it has been a lot of time. But really understanding that, you know, it's not going to be perfect every single day, but our effort, our attitude, our resiliency, our competitive edge needs to be perfect if we want to compete. And everyone says they want to compete for championships. Everyone says they want to win championships, but it's the day-to-day details that are going to get us there. So we continuously talk about trusting the process. And every day we talk about evaluating ourselves. Did we get 1% better? And be intentional about that. So that's what I've really focused on with them, is that, you know, it's great that we're getting better, but if it's only 2 out of 10 times, we're not going to be even an average team. 10 out of 10, that's the expectation. If we're 9 out of 10, that's pretty good. But 2 out of 10, 3 out of 10, that's not acceptable. You got to be a program changer. That's what they signed up to be. And we need to make sure that we're 10 out of 10 every single day.
Sam talked about the Big Ten win. That was the first win since 2019. When you get hired into a program that was struggling in the past, what are your first steps as a head coach to kind of start that new rebuild process for the program?
I talked about it, you know, the first day that I got here, and it is recruiting. It is the culture. Those are the two things that for me are musts that I am very intentional about. Every day we're talking about culture, and it goes back once again, we've been using that word, that championship mindset. And also the recruiting pipeline in this area is unbelievable. If we keep the best kids home from even from the DMV area, but now you get to sprinkle in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware. I just think, you know, looking at that, and I've been very fortunate to get some key players, you know, from Georgia, from a couple other states around this area. But I think it speaks volumes about this area. You know, it speaks volumes that you have DC right next door to us. We have Baltimore. And I think that there's a lot of things here that we have to offer that other schools don't. So I definitely use that in the recruiting pitch as well. But it starts with the recruiting. It starts with players that, you know, they might be young coming in, but I always talk about the soccer ball doesn't know how old you are. It's your experiences. It's, you know, them competing in championship games. We have all Americans. We have national players of the year. We have national team kids. We have youth national team kids. And that experience is what is going to help us achieve that championship mindset.
I know that you also coach some like club and academy level teams for like teenagers. I know it's like 14-ish to 18. How do you use some of that experience once you took over ahead of a college program and also when you were assistant at Rutgers?
Yeah, I think development, you know, that's the biggest thing, is that, you know, when you're with an academy team, you're teaching the fundamentals, whether it's technical, tactical, physical, mental side of it. And I really have used what I did and that piece of it to almost like start my evaluation process to see where my players were currently. So I did use that to sort of lean on. But I think once again, it's like, you have to be able to reach every player, you know, and I always talk about there's personality coaches or there's ego coaches. For me, I believe I'm a personality coach. I need to make sure I'm reaching every player, and maybe because I explain it one way, it might get to you, but it might not get to somebody else. So how do I adjust my personality? How do I adjust my approach so that way you understand it? And that's something that I definitely learned coaching on the youth side, is that not everyone's going to get it on the first try. Okay, so let me explain it another way. Let me try another way. And that definitely has helped me in my coaching career.
What would you say has been the biggest challenge since you got to Maryland? Like, take us through an anecdote or a story where you were kind of just like, what, like, I mean, I'm sure coaches kind of, it's your first time head coach. You know, there's so many things that we've heard from coaches about when they first get, they like, I had no idea I even had to deal with this. What stories do you have from that side of where you're just like, this is kind of crazy. Like, this is overwhelming. I have no idea why I didn't even sign up for this.
I don't know if it's so much on other people. I think it was me. I remember like my first meeting with them. And for so long, I was an associate head coach, and I was very fortunate that I was involved with every decision at my prior school, like head coaches meetings. I went to everything. But I remember sitting down like the second day in the VTH video room, and I'm sitting down and I'm looking, I'm like, man, when is this meeting going to get started? And my staff looked at me, they're like, Meg, you need to start it. I'm like, oh yeah, that's me. That's me. So I think me as like a, you know, I was sort of comfortable, obviously, in my position as the associate head coach where, you know, I was sort of behind the scenes with the decisions, but I think being the forefront of the voice and, you know, everything I say matters, everything I do matters, everything I do in front of the team that definitely takes on life. So I think that was the biggest change for me is like, it sounds simple, but just like literally starting every meeting, ending every meeting, what was my message? What was my message to be intentional to make sure that everyone's on par? But those little details for me, I feel like I'm in a lot more meetings right now than I ever have been. I think that's the biggest difference of being a head coach. Assistant coaches get to be out on the field a little bit more. So I'm jealous with that because I love being out on the pitch. But I think that was the biggest like aha moment for me. I'm like, oh wow, I am starting and ending everything. My message is coming from me. So I think that was the biggest adjustment for me.
I think it was like 19 new players that you brought in, 10 transfers. Was that a purposeful decision by you to kind of reset the program? And were those some tough conversations that you had to have with maybe returning players?
Yeah. I wasn't intentional about that because I did know obviously the ins and outs of Maryland women's soccer. I was in charge of scouting and, and nothing against anybody, but I just knew sort of my style was going to be different. I think that's what makes every coach different. And it doesn't make them, you know, a bad player doesn't make me a bad coach. I just think like our styles are a tad bit different. So I was intentional about bringing in 19 new faces. I knew that I was going to be able to get my type of players in. And I sort of needed that stopgap to have enough for last season. I think the players that we got in have did an unbelievable job. You know, they bought into the process, they brought into once again, trusting the process and getting better. And we did get better last year. We got better on the field, but also culturally too, of having that championship mindset. But I'm excited about the 23 class that I have coming in. Really excited about the 24s that are coming in as well. And we're getting a lot of attention from future 25. So I'm excited about the future classes that are coming to Maryland.
Yeah, kind of touching on that recruiting class. I checked today, you guys have two top 60 prospects and a top 25 goalie coming in. Can you kind of talk about this great recruiting class you brought in for next year and what the future has in store for the program with these new faces?
Yeah, you're gonna see a team that is competitive, that hates losing. And that's something that I speak about a lot. And it's like when I ask recruits, do you love winning or do you hate losing? For me, I hate losing. I think there's a big difference with that piece of it. So you're going to see a class of players on the field that are ultra competitive, but also have Maryland pride. And that to me was massive. I wanted to make sure that these players wanted to come to Maryland, that we weren't a backup school, and that they were excited to become a Maryland legend. And that's what I kept talking about in the recruiting process, is that if you feel like this is home, then we need to make this happen, you know, because I feel like at the end of the day, this recruiting class does have some power behind it. And that definitely helped with other recruits in the future too. But the biggest thing I spoke about was Maryland pride. You got to have Maryland pride. If you don't have Maryland pride, I don't want you here. At the end of the day, you need to come in here and you got to recognize that you're playing for something bigger than just yourself. And we've done a really good job, I believe my coaching staff, of bringing back the alumni. Bringing back the first coach, Hans. You know, Hans actually just came to our training 2 days ago and he spoke to the team. And that to me is really, really important because once again, there's so much of a history in here. And I think that's the biggest thing is like, you don't know where you're going unless you know where you came from. And we have a really rich history, so it can be done. But I spoke about that with the recruits during the recruiting process, is that you know, we are not anybody's backup school. You want to come in here and make a name for yourself, this is where you need to be.
Would you say that you recruit freshmen different than you recruit transfers?
Yeah. I mean, the recruiting process is completely different. You know, I just had somebody, which I'm sure you saw, but Eden White, Santa Clara transfer, played center back and won a national championship. I mean, how many players get to say they won a, you know, an NCAA college championship? And I think that her experience is invaluable of that back line, because we do have some young players, our experience, but I think to have a leader, especially in that center back position, is phenomenal. But you know, she came on the recruiting process and didn't bring her mom or dad, and just sort of, you know, it was definitely a different type of recruiting visit than what you do with, you know, juniors in high school. So it's definitely a different type of recruiting process with that. But once again, I give the credit to University of Maryland. I mean, the academics, you know, I don't have to sell anything on University of Maryland, the location, what you can do while you're here, but more importantly, the success that you have afterwards. We're a high rate, whether it's, you know, in whatever field you choose to be in, because of the location that we have. So it's definitely different. But Maryland, definitely the name of it, the campus, the academics, the resources help that.
All right, Coach. So I know I emailed you about our top five, and that was too short notice, but we did this game with other people on our guests. So what we do is we take you through, because you're a very unique case. You grew up in Maryland, but you coached at Rutgers, and now you're back at Maryland. So we're going to do a segment called Maryland or Rutgers. Don't worry, we're not going to make you choose in between, but we're going to do different aspects from the university, and it's just rapid fire. What comes to mind? Which one was better? Better beaches, Maryland or Rutgers?
Maryland.
Better food, Maryland or Rutgers?
Rutgers.
Okay, better facilities, New Brunswick or College Park?
College Park.
Better drivers?
I'm aggressive, so I'm going to say Rutgers.
Annapolis or Trenton?
Annapolis.
Better jerseys?
I like the Maryland flag, so I'm going to say Maryland.
Okay, so you took my next question. Better state flag?
Oh, without a doubt, Maryland.
Better signature food, or like crabs, or I don't know what New Jersey's known for.
But New Jersey's known for like pizza and...
Oh, yeah. Okay, so pizza or crabs?
I feel like this is a tie for me, depending on what day, because I love crabs. I do love, but I do love a good slice of pizza. It's the water in New Jersey, you know?
Okay. And then last question, better weather.
Maryland.
I know it's short, but it was very good to get to kind of hear your perspective as a new coach. And we're excited to see what you guys do in the future. Obviously a big step last year, but it sounds like you're expecting big things coming up. So excited to see how that plays out.
Yeah, me too. I appreciate you guys hopping on, and just want to say thanks so much for supporting Maryland women's soccer. You're going to see great things in the fall.
Thanks, Coach.
Thank you very much.
We're back. We're not talking NIL. We hope you enjoyed the episode. Put a lot of hard work into it, but we're back to your regularly scheduled program. Just had an interview, and now... talking about Maryland athletics.
Yeah, one of our favorite things to do. It's good to be back in the lab cooking. Same as always with the hard work. And we hope you guys enjoyed this episode just as much as you enjoyed the other ones. But yeah, lots of Maryland sports to talk about. We're kind of heading into the final stretch here, Brendan and Mike. So what have you guys seen? We can start with the most impressive team probably from the weekend, and that was the baseball team. Who just scored a ridiculous amount of runs. We're recording Tuesday night. Mike, what happened against the Retrievers, and what happened this past weekend?
So the second inning lasts about, I'd say, 45 minutes. The Terps put up a record-breaking 17 runs. That's the most in program history in that inning. And then they ended up winning the game 24-11, and they got called off at the end of the seventh inning. I guess the UMBC coach had enough. Just kind of quit.
It's kind of crazy you can do that.
So they are on a 3-game winning streak, and they have a big series coming up this weekend against Indiana. Maryland is second in the Big Ten right now, trailing only Indiana. So this is huge with big postseason implications.
Yeah, I want to ask you a little bit about that series, because I think that that's one of the more interesting storylines that could come out of this weekend. It's kind of the clash for the Big Ten, and we've seen Maryland struggle with the midweeks. But the weekend series, they've generally been pretty good, Mike. What's been the biggest difference for that? I know it's been mostly the pitching, take us through a little bit of what you've seen when you looked at the data.
Weekend series, they are very good. They've won 19 straight Big Ten series now, trailing all the way back to 2021. So they have a pretty good track record as of recently. The thing about weekend series, I would say, is just the pitching rotation. You have a solid Friday night guy in Jason Savakul. You can depend on him. And then for Saturdays, you got Nick Dean. Now, Nick Dean, he did not play last Saturday. They had their usual Sunday starter, Kyle McCoy, come in and start that Saturday game. But you have a solid Saturday starter in Nick Dean. And then you have the freshman McCoy on Sundays, who we know can put up great performances, especially with that one-hit, I believe, eight-inning performance against Iowa. So I really think it just comes down to the pitching. A big storyline to watch out, though, is Nick LaRusso's health. He did not play tonight against UMBC. And of course, he is the home run leader in the Big Ten currently. So that would be a huge loss for the Terps heading into this Giants series.
Yeah, I think when you look at the pitching, it's really just comes down to they only have three arms they can really trust. Obviously, McCoy, Savakul, and Dean, but they haven't really been able to discover that fourth arm. And I think that's kind of hurting them. But the good news is once you get to postseason play, that doesn't play as much of a role. You can kind of rely on those guys. Indiana this week, it's going to be a test for that pitching. Three guys in the top 10 for Big Ten average. You have Brock Tibbetts. Then you alongside you have Devin Taylor and Philip Glasser. Sorry if I mispronounced any of those. But Indiana, very solid squad. I mean, they rank in the top five in both offense and defense. Or offense and pitching.
And do you know, where Maryland ranks pitching-wise with ERA?
Yeah, I actually do, because I have it pulled up. They're second to last in the Big Ten, which is crazy to think that the team that's second in the Big Ten has the second worst pitching. It just shows how good their offense has been. But their offense is sixth in the Big Ten, so something, they just have some sort of mojo, huh, Mike?
Well, they average the second most runs per game.
It's the average is low.
The batting average is low. They're one of the best power hitting teams. They have the most home runs and they have the best slugging percentage. So I really think that ranking of like how good their offense is just kind of skewed with that batting average.
I feel like it's got to be a little bit in part because they're getting so many at bats that batting average is maybe dropping a little bit. But big picture, when you look at this team, Brendan, do you see maybe this is a team, they're not going to host a regional most likely, Mike, we've kind of determined, right? But do you think they could make some noise in the postseason with kind of those bats? What do you think could maybe lead to them shooting up and maybe advancing through a regional?
I mean, any team that hasn't lost a Big Ten series in 700-plus days is going to be a team that can make some noise. But I think, like you said, you're not going to host a regional. And so I think that doesn't really mean that much at the end of the day because, you know, how much does... I mean, yeah, you'd like to be home. You'd like to have home cooking. But at the end of the day, like...
They lost one last year and they hosted.
Absolutely. And like baseball, you know... The tournament's being played and most students are out. Like, I don't know how much of an impact home has in terms of a fan perspective. But I do think the point I'm making here is that I think they can maybe win a couple games and maybe get out of the first round, kind of the pool play, but I don't think past that.
What about you, Mike? What do you look at this team? What's their ceiling and maybe what could happen with the floor?
So D1 Baseball released projections the other week for postseason play, the NCAA tournament. And Maryland was projected to be a 3 seed. So they are currently, according to D1 Baseball, of course, they don't actually do the seeding and all that, but they are projected to make the tournament.
Yeah, no, obviously. I think that the tournament is kind of the floor at this point, right? Like, they're not going to miss the tournament, we would think.
The goal is making a super regional.
And how likely is that, would you say?
It all depends on the pitching, really, because you know the offense is going to be there. You know that but... Is the pitching going to show up? Because there's been games where Savakul throws a dud. There's, Kyle McCoy hasn't...
He's a freshman.
There's been games where he has struggled. Yeah. So you just don't know if the pitching will be there.
Yeah, I think that this series is going to tell us a lot about this team and kind of the resolve they have. When you look at maybe if they can make a Big Ten, another back-to-back Big Ten championship run, this weekend we'll have a lot to say about
that. They only trail Indiana by one conference win right now.
Yeah.
So it really is make or break this series.
Yeah, you cannot, if you're Maryland, you cannot lose this series if you want to kind of, because this is the only time you're going to play Indiana. If you're Maryland on the road at Bloomington, if they take 2 out of 3, I think that the Big Ten hopes are looking really, really solid for this team. Team, on the other hand, maybe, continuing to kind of hang around. They're also a little bit on the bubble. That's a softball squad. Lost 2 of 3 this past weekend against Penn State. The offense, guys, it just continues to struggle. They really can't seem to get anything going. Courtney Weish has been a beast these past couple weeks, but they've really struggled. Penn State, I mean, they scored two runs, and one run. I mean, it's not good. And they really just, the at-bats have looked bad. It's not even like they're failing to cash in on runs. They just look sloppy.
I feel like this is maybe the third or fourth week in a row we've been back here and, you know, gone to look over the final scores, and it's been like, wow, like less than like seven combined.
The pitching's there. The pitching is there. This is two of the strongest, you know, 1-2 punches in the entire country. You have a great closer in Kira Butcher who leads the nation in saves as a freshman. This is a squad that really, I think, when you look at, it's almost the opposite of the baseball team. They have the ability to win tight, low-scoring games, but the power in the lineup is just so lacking. Other than Amelia Leck, this team doesn't have any sort of power output, and I think that that's really, really hurting them. On the other hand, I would still say they're on the right side of the bubble right now, just because last year seven Big Ten teams made it. They currently sit with a decent record in the league, so I think that they're kind of on the fringe. It'll be interesting to see what type of seeding they're looking at.
You know what I was thinking about earlier? It's a weird comp, but the softball team kind of reminds me of the wrestling team, where they're great non-conference, but once conference play comes, they start to struggle. Like, if you take out their conference record, the softball team is 24-5.
That's very good.
However, in conference, they're 7-10.
Yeah. What's interesting, though, is they beat good teams in out-of-conference play. I mean, they beat the number three team in the country, Oklahoma State, and Oregon, who's now like 16th in the country, was then 22. Really, I just think it's been the offense that's just tailed off. Clearly, there's been some sort of scouting that's been done on these hitters because, I mean, the numbers have dropped off substantially. And I think also when you look at this team, they really have struggled in close games. I wrote a piece for the Diamondback, if you want to check it out, self-plug, about the struggles in late games and how it's impacted their tournament hopes. And Brendan, I know that they're kind of sitting on the fringe. Where do you see them maybe at this point?
Yeah, I know that the projections from this week have them in the first four out. So that means there's a chance, right? You have pretty much 3 weeks, 2 weeks left of play, and then you have Big Ten tournament. I think if they keep doing what they're doing, I think they'll make it. If their win percentage stays the same, I think they'll make it in. I just don't know if that's sustainable.
Yeah, they kind of are at, this is a huge weekend series coming up because they get a team who's a very similar ilk to them. Wisconsin's 8-9 in the conference. They're 23-18 overall. So I think that this series, when you look at it, it's so important for them to be able to have a big weekend.
Yeah, and Wisconsin's on the last four in right now. I mean,
yeah,
there doesn't get a bigger series than playing the team that holds your last spot.
Right.
Big Ten tournament-wise, how far do you think they go?
That's a tough question because it's almost like basketball this year. I know we're making all the weird comps to other sports, but Northwestern is such an elite team. They're 15-2 this year. They're so far above the rest, like almost how Purdue was. And then every other team is almost like clumped together in that like 10-7, 8-9, you know, 7-10 win range, where it's almost like any team could kind of escape out of there. I see them maybe getting to the semifinals as a ceiling. The floor getting bounced in the first round because the pitching is so bad. It's softball. It's a one-game series. You know, this isn't really like any other, you know, baseball, softball format where it's one game, win or lose, you're out. Anything can kind of happen. The strong pitching gives them a chance, though.
That's the thing. The thing with strong pitching is if you let up, you know, very, very few runs like they happen the entire season, you give your team a chance in every single game. But the opposite is, if you have an incredible offense who's going to score 15 runs a game, you know, the defense could always let up. If you're letting up 2 runs a game, you don't need that much to go right for you to win a game. You need some good bounces, and you need to just put the ball in play.
So that's the question I would pose to you guys as we kind of wrap up this Diamond segment. Would you rather look at the overall from the baseball side with the very strong offense and maybe the weaker pitching?
Good question.
Or the softball side where the offense has been so porous, but the pitching, you know you can count on two seniors to be able to provide for you. Mike, I'll have you start.
I mean, offense wins games. The reason you play games is
the defense wins championships.
That is true.
So you lie on the baseball side.
If you want to win a game, you want to score more runs. And, you know, the baseball team can do that. Softball team has struggled at the same time, though. Like you said, defense wins championships. If you can hold the team, even while your offense struggles, if you can hold that other team, you'll win. So it's a good question.
Brendan, I turn to you.
It's hard to say. I'm going to go with softball.
Okay.
Because offense wins games, defense wins championships, and defense, I think, on a small scale, can win you games.
I agree.
You look at this weekend, right? 2-3 lost, 2-1 win, 1-2 loss. All those games, one swing of the bat, the game is tied, or you're up by one more run, or you're winning. You need just one home run to go over the wall.
Penn State did.
Exactly.
You hit a home run in the eighth inning, won the game.
Won the game. That's all you need to do to win those games. And if your team can keep you in it, you can keep morale high. You know, you get down by 10 runs, the game is over.
Yeah.
You keep within one, that means every time someone's at the plate until the last out, you can win. So I'd go softball. What do you think, Sam?
I think there's a higher variance when it comes to lower scoring games. A team who maybe is worse, like if Maryland plays Northwestern, say, Northwestern's going to win 9 out of 10 times. If Northwestern and them both are in this high-scoring slugfest, we know Northwestern's probably going to prevail because their offense is very, very good, right? Maryland's hasn't shown that. However, if you get Northwestern, drag them into like a 2-1, 3-2 type of game, you have a better chance of that one swing happening and breaking it open, you know? And that's why I think you hear coaches all the time being like, we want to kind of drag them into our style of play if you're trying to go for the upset. So in a tournament setting where there's, you know, singular games, singular elimination, I would kind of lean on the strong pitching side as we head into tournament play. But each team has very unique styles. I'm very interested to see big weekends for both teams, guys. So we kind of parlay that into another big weekend. We got tournament play. Mike?
So shifting the focus to a team Brendan said had the biggest chance to win a championship this spring. However, they've lost back-to-back games now against ranked Big Ten opponents heading into this weekend's Big Ten tournament. Brendan, what is going on with the women's lacrosse team?
If you once again look at the landscape, I don't think with the information I had present to me at the time, I would have made a different prediction. But scored the past two games, lost to Penn State 7-12, and then lost to Northwestern 6-13. Got outscored combined 13-25. Both those games, Sam, very ugly. Both those games looked flat, and they just got absolutely dominated on pretty much every account, on shooting, on ground ball controls, on face-offs. It just wasn't pretty. Penn State game, they were in it to the third quarter, cut it to two late in the middle of fourth, but at the end of the day, just couldn't get the job done, and they just didn't have any momentum. Like, they'd win a face-off, go take a not ideal shot and then lose momentum, and then Penn State was able to just run the clock out. You come out slow again, you come out not scoring. I mean, Northwestern.
They were down 3-0 in the beginning, tied it at half, heading into, you know, 4-4 at half. And then I think what really changed was the offense just really struggled. I mean, when you look at Maryland's offense throughout the whole year, the attack has been so inconsistent. I know Eli Cohen did a piece talking about how the offense has really, it's been really hot at times, and also it's just been very, very enigmatic almost. The highs are very high, the lows are very low. When you look at the second half of Northwestern, that was the low point. Maryland only had 18 total shot attempts in the second half, while Northwestern had 34. The goalie, Emily Sterling, had a great game. She held the Wildcats to a 38.2% shooting percentage, which was their lowest of the season. Credit to Elon.
That's what I was about to say. I mean, it has not been Emily Sterling.
Sterling's been amazing. The thing is that their offense has just not been good enough. They want to talk about
Kathy Reese.
Yeah, Kathy Reese wants to talk about the balance attack. That's all I've heard from what people have been saying. What I've read is she wants the very balanced attack. And they have some great players. I mean, obviously Corey Edmondson's good. Emily Bosco's great. But they really have not been able to kind of put it together. And I think that's been kind of the biggest detriment to this team, is that the inconsistency has really plagued them.
Yeah, you talked about Emily Sterling and trying to, you know, get that save percentage up at 500 in the Northwestern game. And Kathy Reese said that's the mark. If you're above that, then you give your offense a good chance to win the game. Six goals is not a chance to win the game.
No, the offense just is not good enough at this point. And so as we head into the Big Ten tournament, where they're going to play Ohio State, who they dominated. That's Ohio State's winless in Big Ten play. That should be an easy win for the Terps.
It's a good draw.
But then you kind of look at the next round, and it's going to be tough. The semifinals and championship, the Big Ten is loaded. Obviously, Penn State, Northwestern, who they lost to. This is going to be a really tough, tough road if they want to get back to the championship game. What do you guys see? John Hopkins, another strong team. What do you see from this lacrosse team? Do you think they can get back to maybe kind of finding that groove again, Mike? What's the projection for this squad here heading into tournament play?
You know, the episode before the NIL episode, we were talking about how the team had not faced opponents like the upcoming stretch with Penn State and then number two Northwestern. Maybe after they face that tough competition, they're going to be more prepared for it coming into the Big Ten tournament, coming into the NCAA tournament. So maybe that's all they needed, you know?
Yeah, I think that that's something interesting. John Hopkins is the likely draw, Brennan, if they were able to defeat Ohio State. How do you see that game going, and then how do you see a potential rematch versus Northwestern?
Yeah, I mean, we talk about all this, but I still think they'll get to the championship, the Big Ten championship, and here's why. Absolutely destroyed Ohio State earlier in the year. It's another home game. I see, like you said, Sam, an easy win. Then Johns Hopkins versus Rutgers. Maryland has never lost to Johns Hopkins in women's lacrosse. Count that as a win. And then you get to the championship.
Yeah.
So, and you're looking at the number two seed in the Big Ten, still a very, very solid team.
The thing is we talk about it all the time, right? Like, this is, we're stacking it based off what the program success is. So for a lot of other teams, this is, you know, an elite year that, wow, this is, they had such a good season. But when you're looking at this team overall, it's hard to kind of say that they're maybe not having the type of season that they've had in the past. So I think that that's something that we'll have to see pan out.
And yeah, and that absolutely also goes for men's lacrosse. Had the big rivalry game this past weekend against Johns Hopkins. Great game. Came down to the end. Maryland had a chance with, you know, 20 seconds left, 10 seconds left. Scored. They were down two. Scored. Won the faceoff. 20 seconds left. Bring the ball down. Passing around a little bit and just threw the ball away.
Yeah, it was. I think that John Hopkins, if you're Maryland, you cannot lose that game. You cannot allow them to come into CQ Stadium with the rivalry game, Big Ten championship on the line, and take that win. I mean, I think when you look at this team, it's really just they're playing. It almost feels like they're playing like everyone knows the weight of what they did last year is kind of on their shoulders. Now, I know that's super narrative-y and probably isn't actually what's happening, but that's how it feels as an audience member. When you watch this team, it feels like there's so much pressure to kind of replicate what they did last year that it's almost hurting them this year because everyone is holding them to this ridiculously high standard and well-deserved. I mean, they've been one of the best program in the country for the past 5 years. But, Mike, I mean, that's a lot of pressure to have to replicate year in and year out. Do you think that's maybe getting to the squad in the helmets?
I think we also got to remember that their starting goalie has been out for the whole season.
Yeah, but they've had that's been out for the whole year. I feel like you have to adjust at some point.
That's a hard thing that, like, I don't know lacrosse that much, but I feel like the goalkeeper position has to be one of the most important.
Yeah, it is, but their freshman has been good. Rupel's been great, Brennan. I mean, what do you think? Do you think that that's something that they've kind of had to adjust, they've adjusted to, and we shouldn't really put much weight into it as we look at the season and grading it?
I think he's been very good, but I do agree with Mike in the sense that you lose the centerpiece of your team, preseason All-American.
Like, he's the team leader, right? Correct?
Yeah, it's a tough person to go out, and I think if he doesn't go out, they probably don't lose to Johns Hopkins, and they probably don't lose to Notre Dame. But who knows if he makes a save against Virginia?
But I don't think you can save that or say that really because we don't know. I mean, he's injured. Injuries happen all the time. We don't, you know, when we're looking at other teams, we don't say, oh, well, if they had this person, they would have been a great year. Like, you just kind of have to deal with it and move on. They've made the replacement. It's not like he was injured for one huge game. He's been out the whole year, basically. They've had to make this adjustment. I just think that it's not for John Tillman in that type of atmosphere. The program usually gets a win like that. And so I think that that's something that is a little concerning maybe for Terps fans as they head into postseason play.
Here. Yeah, and they're most likely going to get a rematch against Johns Hopkins. The Big Ten tournament first round is taking place at the University of Maryland on Maryland Day at 8 p.m. under the lights, CQ Stadium against Rutgers. That's going to be another tough game.
Yeah.
Rutgers is a very strong opponent. Just beat them by 3. Rutgers, another ranked team, definitely going to make the NCAA tournament. The fact that the worst team in the Big Ten is ranked in the top 15 in the country is, you know,
it's wild. Ridiculous.
And so I think Maryland will get that win. They're going to face Johns Hopkins. Johns Hopkins is hosting the Big Ten tournament. They're very loyal to the lacrosse team.
That's their team.
That's their team. It's their only D1 team, and so men's or women's. But it's going to be another tough game. And I really, it's really hard to say when that game. Maryland's going to be fired up. You just lost the rivalry at home. But it's going to be tough.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that it's going to be really hard to head into that type of snake pit atmosphere and pull out a win. So I'll pose another question to you as I'm asking a lot of questions today. what do we see the ceiling as for both these teams? If I set the line at 4.5 wins combined for Big Ten tournament wins, will we go over or under?
In the Big Ten tournament?
Yeah.
Under.
Under.
That means one of the teams has to win.
Win, exactly.
Oh.
Yeah,
okay. So what if I change it to 3.5?
Under.
Oh, okay. So I would go over on 3.5.
Yeah, over.
So, Brendan, you think, which team do you think gets bounced early?
I think men's team loses to Johns Hopkins.
Okay. So that's the...
And I think the women's team makes it to the final. That's 2 wins. That's 3 wins total.
Okay. So that's, I think that's interesting. But do you see the women's team is still kind of having that higher ceiling that they can get to? Because I feel like the women's team is a little more... I know we just talked about their inconsistency. They, I feel like, are the safer team to when you look at it. The men's team, I feel like, has another gear that they can get to. It's just if they reach or not. I mean, when they've played the best teams in the country, they've competed. Virginia, they won. Notre Dame, it was triple overtime. Johns Hopkins, really good game. They have that gear. I just don't know if they can get it consistently, but if they get it for a stretch of games here, heading down the stretch, they could repeat.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's something we just got to figure out.
Time will tell. And I think that time will tell. Saturday is going to be a busy day for Terps fans because, holy moly, is there a lot happening. You got spring football, which is back. Woo, clapping up football season. Always on our mind here at Under the Shelf.
From the show, Mike Loxley.
Mike Loxley leads the Terp into their spring game. The question is, guys, will they have enough healthy offensive linemen that are still in the program to block for both teams? Because there's been 3 transfers out from that offensive line room, 2 projected starters. I think that that's something that when you look at this team, that's a clear weakness. Talia is constantly scrambling already, but now even with more offensive linemen, Jalen Duncan leaving for the draft, your center leaves, your right guard leaves. That's something that, I don't know, are they going to be able to recover from that? Is that something that, you know, is kind of going to be a linchpin for their season all year?
That's definitely a concern considering Talia's injury last year.
Yeah.
That is most definitely a concern that has to be looked at.
I think that that's something when you talk about Talia, is he going to get, you know, pocket frantic because of the injury last year? You know, this is his last year and, you know, he's probably not trying to get injured. I'm not saying he's playing with the idea of injury in the back of your mind, but it's always going to be a part of your consciousness thinking, okay, I just tore my ACL last year or came close to it almost. With this offensive line, are they going to be able to hold up enough to be able to protect the Talia? I mean, he is a good quarterback at escaping pressure. We all know that. But if you're constantly getting wear down by edge rushers and interior pass rush, it's going to be tough for any quarterback to figure that out. Brendan, do you see that as being kind of the biggest weakness on this year's team?
Unless the defense is a very different season from last year, Maryland will look very similar.
So you think that the defense will ultimately hold them back? I mean, they do have some talent coming back, though. Jayshon Barnum, freshman All-American. You're bringing in a couple cool, good transfers. I do think the defense could have a surprising year. I personally think the O-line is going to be the biggest detriment because I think when you look at Maryland, you think strong offense, right? The defense is always going to be kind of mediocre. We've talked about that. But if you take away what is their strength, their passing game, because the offensive line is so bad, I really think that could hurt them. So they really need to find some guys who can step up and protect for Talia or else it could be a disaster.
You didn't mention it, but it also affects Roman Hemby too.
Yeah, that as well. And Hemby and Littleton are 2 of the Big Ten's best backs. So you really hope as a Terps fan that they're able to kind of find some holes. But the spring game will be good to see.
And then the professional side of football, yeah. Maryland and the drafts, on how many people do you think from Maryland get drafted?
Yeah, I think 5. And I actually have a little game for you guys.
Oh, so, I didn't hear about this. Let's hear it.
We're going to be doing, it's the thing I like to do. We're going to go over unders on the pick that each Maryland player will be selected as.
Winner gets a prize.
Okay. So I'm going to give it for 5 players, okay? We might do rounds for the later, because but for the earlier rounds, we're going to go. Okay, 21.5 for Deontay Banks.
I think he gets drafted under that, meaning he gets drafted before.
Before. Mike?
So over.
Okay, so Mike thinks he gets selected after, we'll change it to, and Brendan thinks before. So that's a good start. Next, we're going to go Jakorian Bennett. Now, Jakorian is an interesting case because I think that he has one of the highest potentials as maybe a player, but we're going to go with round 5. Is he before or after that?
Before.
Yeah, I was going to say before too.
Okay, before. So both of you guys are going before on Jakorian in round 5. And I think Bennett maybe could be a very sneaky pick for an NFL team here.
NFL teams love Maryland cornerbacks.
Apparently they do. Okay. Next, we are going to go, this is an interesting one, okay? Rakim Jarrett, pick number 200. So that would be like the sixth, seventh round.
Maybe I'm biased. Before.
Before, okay. Mike?
I remember looking at one of the draft boards, and he was like in the 200s. Pretty good. So I'm going to say...
After, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the Athletic's recent mock draft, Jarrett's one of the most interesting players because his range is so different. Mock drafts have him in the third round. Mock drafts have him in the seventh round. So I think that he's going to be a very interesting player. Okay, next up. You guys ready? Jalen Duncan, pick number 85.
After.
Okay, so both you guys going with after. Was that a bad line? What do we think? Do we think Duncan could kind of sneak into the third, early third, late second? Or no? Do we think he's a clear fourth round prospect?
I think fourth or fifth round, for sure.
Okay. And then lastly, the GOAT, the kicker, Chad Ryland. I'm not even going to say a round for this one. Is he drafted? No draft for Mike. Okay, Brendan?
No draft.
No draft. Wow. So I think he does get drafted personally, but he's in competition with Jake Moody, and there hasn't been a kicker. There's only been two kickers selected in the past, like, 3 years or something. So
statistically, it's not on his side.
It's not likely, but there hasn't been a kicker as good as Chad coming through in a little bit. So I just want to put it out there, again, for the audience. Deontay Bikes, Mike said after, Brendan said before. Both of them said before for Bennett. Mike said after for Jarrett, Brendan said before. Both of them said after for Jalen Duncan, and they both think that Chad Ryland will not be getting drafted. Now, this will be five players that will be selected most likely, because I think Ryland will get picked, but that'll be the Terps' highest selection in a very long time, and another very solid point on Mike Locksley's increasingly positive resume as a Terps coach. So that'll be exciting to watch on Thursday, and we're going to see how it turns out. First-round player probably in Deontay Bigs, I think he's kind of been a lock here for a little bit.
Absolutely. All right, let's go into the draft. This week we're doing professional Terps. They could have played any professional. They had to compete in at least one professional game at some point in their lifetime, and they also had to attend the University of Maryland.
That's right.
Shall we get into it?
Yes.
What are the rules? So you only get one basketball player?
One basketball, one football, and then you get one of each sport, basically.
Can I get one men's and one women's?
Yes.
Yes. So, and this is their career as a pro, that's what we're going to judge it on, not their career at Maryland, okay? Just to clarify. Okay. So, who wants to start us off?
Well, Mike, tell us the rankings from the past. Maybe that'll help dictate.
All right. So, rankings from the past. So, the Animals draft, Sam won. The Road Trip Snacks draft, I won. The March Madness, it was like a, what did we do? It was three, right? Uh-huh. Abby Myers won that one.
Good for Abby.
Coach Loxley won the Logos one.
Okay.
I don't have any.
Unfortunately, no.
That's like insane. All right, whatever. Let's go.
Not a good start for Brent.
So I'll pick last then.
Okay. So I can get us started here.
You may.
Okay. I'm going to take the obvious pick. Stephon Diggs, 1-1. Best Maryland player right now. Probably up there as the best Maryland football player in a while. People know who he is. Love me some Stephon Diggs. Mike?
I'm going to go Steve Francis, three-time All-Star, slam dunk champion, rookie of the year, 18.1 points per game in his career.
Yeah, good pick.
Brandon? I'm going to go with Kevin Huerter.
Wow, Kevin Huerter. Interesting pick.
I was one time in an elevator with him.
Were you really?
Yep.
How did it go? Did you say hi?
Of course. Next pick, I'm going to go with Fred Funk.
Oh, drawing back from the terrific Terps, huh?
Absolutely.
Okay. Mike?
I'm going to go Christy Tolliver.
Oh, that's a good pick.
Yeah.
Very, very good pick.
She's been in the WNBA for a while now, too. She's had a great career there.
Yeah. Okay. Next pick for me, I'm going to go with Grace Baldson.
Or Baldson. Great, really good pick.
Field hockey player. She's an Olympian. She's one of the best players in Maryland history. So I'll be taking her to represent me in the field hockey arena. And then for Maryland basketball, this is a hard one because when you look at, you know, Maryland pro players, it's really tough to kind of figure it out. And I thought about Len Bias. I really did.
Not a pro. Never was a pro.
I know, but just when you think about it. But I'm actually going to get John Lucas. He was an elite point guard. And I just think he's going to be a solid pick for me.
I am going to go Vernon Davis here for my football pick.
Ooh, interesting.
I see Brendan Grimstein right now. Did I take him off your board?
No, Mike, because I made my board of only current players. Keep going.
So Vernon Davis, one of the best tight end in program history. Good pick,
Mike. It's a great pick.
You?
I guess this is a football pick. Maybe it's a lacrosse pick. Jared Bernhard.
Ooh, good pick. So you can use him for lacrosse because you did football already, right?
Or, no.
No, you haven't. Okay. So
I'll use him for, like, if you play lacrosse in Maryland, I'll use him.
Yeah, okay. Back to it.
I'm going to go to lacrosse.
No,
and then
no,
football, no. I'm gonna take Matt Rambo because that's probably you're going to take, so.
How did you know?
Because it was him or it was Wisnowskis, and so I just took a pick from you.
All right. Well, then I am going to go baseball here. Charlie Keller, 5-time All-Star.
Wow.
4-time World Series champion. Never watched him play. This was in the 1940s, but you know what?
Wait, Charlie Keller? Are you serious?
Yeah.
It's my terrific turp.
Oh! Stay tuned.
Hold your horses. Okay. With my next pick, the baseball, I was honestly surprised at how much the baseball was lacking in terms of who some of the greater baseball players, like, you have, you know, guys who are currently playing, but when I was looking at players, I had no idea who half of them were, so I'm going to take someone who I know, and that is Brandon Lau, player for the Rays. He's off to an incredible start this year, so I'm okay with that pick. And then I'm back up on the clock, and this is where it gets really interesting. Like, when you look at Maryland as a whole, There's great lacrosse players, obviously, but I kind of wanted to, you know, get away from that a little bit. I think that, you know, I wanted to get someone who has really made an impact, and I'm going to take Ronaldo Nehemiah.
That's my pick. That's my pick.
He is in a retired American track and field, was ranked very highly over and over again, was number one in the world for 4 straight years. He's the first man to run the event in under 13 seconds. So I'll take Ronaldo as my pick.
Crazy how much faster that event has gotten. What do you got, Mike?
You guys have a bunch of great athletes, but you guys don't have a gold medal winner. I'm going to take Dominique Dawes, a gymnast. She won a 1996 gold medal in the Olympics.
Get yourself an Olympian.
There That's go. Good. I mean, I do agree with you that the Olympics are the pinnacle.
Yeah, of athletics. I agree.
I've taken only men, and so I'm going to take Diamond Miller.
Oh, drawing back. I'm surprised. No Crystal Lane.
I didn't take a football player, but Jared Bernhard is going to count as a football player.
Okay.
I decided.
That's fine. All right. That's a good draft. That's another good good little top five draft. So we will be ending it with someone you already heard now, and that's Brendan's terrific terp. We missed it so much. Take it away, B.
Yeah, I mean, you may have missed it, but you also may have been looking at the social media and say that there was a ton this week. Charlie Keller, if you're in History 201, this will be a little bit of a relevant segment to you, but most likely, if you're listening, you're not. Charles Ernest Keller Jr. was born in 1916. Where was he born? Anybody know where he was born?
Don't.
Middleton, Maryland. What is Middleton, Maryland, maybe Middletown, Maryland, known for? Farms. He grew up on a 140-acre farm. Each morning, Keller would wake up at 4 a.m. and help out on the farm, tend to the land, and milk the cows. His workout on the pasture helped to develop his muscular and athletic build. After school, Keller would play ball in the field and then run 2.5 miles home to the farm. He would then quickly change into his work clothes so his dad wouldn't know he'd been playing. Then the Depression struck. When he was 17, the Kellers lost their family farm and moved into town. This gave Keller the opportunity to develop his athletic skills. In addition to playing baseball, he was a guard on the basketball team, the leading offensive threat on the soccer team, and a runner on the track team. He threw down a 54-second 400 time to win the state meet. Aside from high school, Keller also played in the weekly Frederick County League, and by the time his senior season arrived, he was one of the leading batters in the country. Unfortunately, his senior season was cut short because he was stricken with appendicitis. When he arrived at Maryland, freshmen couldn't play varsity sports, so he played on the freshman baseball and basketball teams. By his sophomore year, Keller played not only those two sports, but he was also on the football team. He's 5'10", 190 pounds, so walking onto the football team was a no-brainer. But midway through the football season, he had an ankle injury that sidelined him, and he decided to throw all that away to focus on baseball. And also a little bit of basketball. Played on the basketball team for all of his years at Maryland. In the 1937 yearbook, they wrote that Keller was one of the most accurate pot shot artists from long range Marylanders have ever known. Keller was one of the lone consistent marksmen on the team and frequently sent long arches through the hoop to start an old line rally. Pretty impressive from the end of the three-point line. Keller really shined in baseball. He finished his first two varsity seasons at Maryland, batting averages of .500/.495. Wow. That's pretty dang good. Yeah, that's by 1936, Keller came back to campus for a senior year with an accepted offer to play for the New York Yankees. On the Yankees, he was praised for his ability to hit massive, wall-reaching fly balls and home runs, earning him the nickname King Kong. Keller was a four-time World Series champion and five-time All-Star, as Mike just said. In his 13-season career with the New York Yankees and the Detroit Tigers, Keller played over 1,170 games, 189 home runs, and 760 runs batted in. He was elected to the Frederick County and Maryland Sports Hall of Fame, the Kingston Professional Baseball Hall of Fame, the International League Hall of Fame, the University of Maryland Hall of Fame in 1982.
That's a lot of Hall of Fame.
It's a lot of halls and it's a lot of fame. He also had a brother, Harold Keller, who became a catcher with a very short stint for the Washington Senators. With all the money he received from all the different various baseball endeavors, he began a scholarship at the University of Maryland. Keller has many more stories, but his son's very big into horse racing. That's all we have time for today.
Wow.
What a time to connect a little bit of top five and a little bit of terrific Terp.
It's really good. It's a really good time here at Under the Shell.
Yeah, and it's baseball season, so another great job by Brendan. Listen to the NIL episode while you're at it. Go to any places you get your podcast, Apple, Spotify, wherever you may do so. And you can follow us on the socials at Under the Shell, Twitter, Instagram, wherever it may be. We appreciate you all for listening. It was another great episode. We'll be back next week. Have a good rest of your evening.